Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. It's the sort of business card you might see tacked on a bulletin board at a cafe or a yoga class. John or Jane Doe, professional life coach. As new agey as the concept may have once seemed, life coaching has exploded in recent years, pulling in about $2 billion annually. Programs for executives, for career transformation or wellness, professional coaching is gaining on therapy in America's long tradition of self-improvement. Genevieve Smith is senior editor at New York Magazine and a contributor to Harper's Magazine. She wanted to know more about the business of life coaching and was given permission to observe and write about a 5-session training course on one condition, that she also participate. Genevieve, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
So life coach, I guess many coaches now prefer to just say coaching. It's one of those professions that is often used as a punchline. But you found that's really changed in recent years. So when did coaching turn the corner?
Well, you know, and this is sort of anecdotal, but it seemed to me from observation that coaching really sort of changed after the recession, or after the recession hit, and people were really struggling with what to do next and where their careers were going to go. And the corporate sector was going through a lot of changes too. There were a lot of layoffs and downsizing, and coaching sort of stepped in to help those workers who felt really unmoored in this new economy to find their footing.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of licensing requirements are there for aspiring life coaches?
There are no licensing requirements for an aspiring life coach. Anyone can call themselves a coach and start taking clients and charging money. There are, however, professional bodies. There's one main professional body, and we have seen that the profession has gotten more professionalized. There are more people who are seeking out specialized training in order to become a life coach. That being said, the training is still pretty rudimentary. It's nothing like you would see if you were going to become a therapist or a social worker. It's 125 hours plus another 100 or so hours of real world experience. So it's pretty easy to become a life coach. And really, as I said, you don't even need that. You can just open your practice, start taking clients if you wanted to.
But first, you were trained as a life coach. What program did you choose?
I went to CTI, mm-hmm. The Coach Training Institute. They're all the names of these things are so similar. So the Coach Training Institute is based in California, and it's one of the oldest and most well-regarded of the coach training programs. It started in the early 90s, so it's been around for over 20 years. It has tens of thousands of graduates, and it was a 5-part course. Each part was about a month apart and were 3-day modules each one.
How much does it cost?
It costs, well, you know, for me, I was an observer, so I got away with not having to pay for it. But for the students in the class, it was about $6,000 to take the course. And then if they wanted to get fully certified, they ended up having to pay another $5,000 or so to do the extra training to actually get their full certification.
Well, you described some of these sessions, and there is a lot of the sort of jargony phrases like designed their alliance or danced in this moment or one of my favorites. What would your captain say about that? Some of the things that I would imagine in a life coaching or coaching course. But this language is sort of, okay, I'll go with it, dances between emotion and sales pitch. What do you think that relationship is there?
Well, I think you're right. I think it's both of those. I do think that it's tapping into real emotions and real problems, and that sometimes these crazy metaphors actually do seem to help people dig deeper. But it's definitely also a sales pitch, and it's definitely also a business. You know, the coaches themselves are trying to get clients who will pay them money for this service. The coaching school is also, it's created this program in order to convince students that this is the way that you train to become a coach. So it's really doing both of those things at the same time. And sometimes it's a little bit of an awkward juxtaposition to realize that, you know, this isn't just someone who's very sympathetic and very, you know, emotionally connected to you. This is somebody who wants your money.
Talk to us a little bit about some of the methodology, especially the things that I guess were very unexpected for you.
Well, I say the one technique that I found to be the most helpful in my own life was this idea, what CTI called holding the client's agenda, mm-hmm. which meant that if someone comes to you for advice, right, your instinct is to say, well, here's what I would do. Or if you don't say, here's what I would do, it's say, well, I know you. I know what you want. And those are sort of our two like basic, you know, models of helping people usually. And what holding the client's agenda was supposed to mean is that instead of saying what you would do or what you would want for them, is you really try to listen to what it is that they want. Mm-hmm. And I know that sounds incredibly simple and incredibly stupid, but it's actually a very hard thing to do. When someone comes to you and says, I don't know what to do with my career. I don't know, should I stay in this job? Should I go? And then what you have to say is, well, you know, what is it that you like about that job? What would it mean for you to leave that job? And you sort of push them to come up with the answer that they already have. And that I've actually definitely used plenty of times since then. And I find it really helpful and also freeing as a person giving advice or a person helping someone. It's freeing to not have to have your own agenda, to only want what they want for themselves. Mm.
Genevieve Smith is with us. She's a writer who embedded herself in a 5-session course for people looking to become certified coaches, life coaches. She wrote about the experience for Harper's Magazine. You spend some time in the article comparing coaching and therapy and finding that a lot of people are choosing coaching instead of therapy now. What do you think the appeal is now of therapy? Coaching over therapy?
Sure. I think one of the main appeals is that coaching comes across as non-pathologizing, right? I actually had a therapist who was becoming a life coach. And when I asked him to explain to me why, you know, after doing years of training as a therapist, why he was adding life coaching to his resume, he said that a lot of it was a marketing technique. He could go to somebody and say, hey, you know, I've just become a life coach. I'm trying to expand my practice. Can I offer you a session? Would you come and see me? And it doesn't mean that there's something wrong with you. Whereas if he, as a therapist, goes, I really think you could use some therapy, all of a sudden it makes people, you know, very defensive. Uh-huh. There's a feeling that, well, what's wrong with me? You know, I'm fine. And I think some of that is a little bit of a misunderstanding of what therapy is. But certainly for the average person, I mean, there's tons of people, especially they found that especially men who are sort of more resistant to going to therapy, life coaching sounds great. You know, of course, they want to improve their life and get more out of life. But, you know, and perhaps through that process, they're actually kind of secretly getting a little bit of therapy.
Yeah, I'm wondering, you know, you went into this sort of thinking that there was an idea of people might be seeking. Did you come out of it with a different idea about what people want in coaching?
I don't know if it was a different idea than I came in with. I guess, you know, there's sort of two aspects to this, right? There's why people become coaches and why people seek out coaching. And I was sort of curious about both of those, but almost in a way I was less curious of why people seek out coaching. I mean, who doesn't want help, right? Who doesn't want someone who can just be like, here's the path, here's what you're supposed to do next, you know? And so it kind of made sense to me that, you know, if money is no object, if you're not embarrassed by it, then, you know, why wouldn't you want someone who can help you get more out of life? And I was really curious as to making coaching a career and how you sort of went from someone, I mean, clearly if you're going to a coaching school, right, your own life is in transition. You don't know what you're going to do next. You're embarking on a new path. So you're sort of the prime kind of person who seeks life coaching. And at the same time, you believe that you should should be someone else's coach. And so I was kind of curious about that transformation and why people choose that. And what I found that I was sort of delighted by and surprised by was that, you know, the people going in there were genuinely nice people who really wanted to help people. And they felt that they had some sort of skill that they could bring to the table. There were a lot of people who'd had long professions and they were now kind of, you know, phasing out of their main career and they wanted to be able to do something that used all of their built up knowledge over time and all of their people skills and all of their desire to help people. So that I thought was really interesting to kind of understand why someone would choose to become a coach. Mm.
Genevieve, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Genevieve Smith, senior editor at New York Magazine and a contributor to Harper's Magazine. That's where we found her article, 50,000 Life Coaches Can't Be Wrong. You find a link to read more at wordofmouthradio.org. It's not only life coaching that's on the rise. When Word of Mouth continues, why more and more people are turning to astrology for answers.